The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. Now let me stop and ask you a question, you Proverbs scholars that have been with us now all these months are studying Proverbs. What is the unusual thing already about this chapter? But just for verse 1. Raise your hand, I'll call. Anybody else anything unusual? Yes, sir. Prophecy? Well, that's a good... that's not it. What? A new name? Yes, it says the words of King Lemuel. What are most of the words of the Proverbs? Whose words are they? Solomon's. But that's not what I want yet. All right? Yeah, that's right. The mother's talking for a change. I don't mean that it's a change when a mother talks, but it's a change. It's a change when you send everything we're writing down.
I think that's funny.
But anyway, I like that. But but it's nice knowing you, ladies. But anyway, these are the words of the mother. Now, there is a difference of opinion about who Lemuel is. If I had time, I could break the word Lemuel down and show you a few things about what the word means in the vision. It wouldn't help you any, but some people think, and I suspect most people think, that Lemuel was Solomon. And this was a name for Solomon, and really it's sort of an adjective-type noun. It's descriptive as well as being a name, and it may mean that this is the kind of person Solomon was. But anyway, many people think, and it may be true, I don't know, it doesn't matter a great deal, but many people think that these are the words of Solomon, and then it says the prophecy that his mother taught him. Now, heretofore, we've been teaching what Solomon is teaching to his what? Son. So it's the father and the son relationship heretofore. Now, in the last chapter, we come to the mother and son relationship. Could we not then say that what we learn in this chapter are what every mother should teach her son? Would this not be so? So let us notice the four things that the mother taught the son. Now, the main part of it starts at verse 10, but we're going to just run quickly down through verses 1 through 9 to give you the subjects, and then I'm going to teach for a Wednesday night or two, maybe three, on the kind of wife, and this is a little bit repetitious, but it's adding something to what we studied already, the kind of wife a young lady ought to plan to be, the kind of a wife a young man ought to choose, and the kind of a wife that the parents ought to train. All the same thing, you see. For what should a young man look when he looks for a wife? For what should he look? When a young lady wants to be a wife, what kind of wife should she plan to be? And what should parents teach their daughters to be as a wife? Start with verse 10 in a few minutes and go down and discuss this subject with what a wife ought to be, what you young ladies ought to plan to be, what you young men ought to seek, and what we parents ought to teach them to be. But there are three other things that she teaches, we will just almost just practically list them and that's all, that this mother teaches her boy. Now bear in mind, here's the mother teaching the son now, and the father has been telling us all these chapters what he taught his son, and now we come to the teaching of the mother. Okay, let's look at it. The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. What, my son, and what, the son of my womb, and what, the son of my vows. Now the what here is more or less a catchy word, like listen, my son, and listen, the son of my womb, and listen, the son of my vows, or sit up and take notice. What am I going to tell you, my son? What am I going to tell you, the son of my womb? What am I going to tell you, the son of my vows? It's more or less saying, son, sit up and listen. I have something to tell you, and notice what she told him. The first thing you'll find in verse 3, and the second you'll find in verses 4 through 7. The third you'll find in verses 8 and 9, and the fourth thing she taught, verses 10 through 31. All right, let's look at the first thing she taught him in verse 3. Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings. All right, now I want you to put a bracket around that verse and write one, strange women. Strange women. This is the first thing that a woman ought, the first thing that this mother taught this king, or this boy, who was to become the king. She said, give not thy strength unto women. You think she's talking about muscles? You think so? I don't think so. I think she's talking about strength of character. And I will tell you, big muscle-bound fella, something right now. It takes more strength to stand alone and not do wrong and say no to temptation than it ever took to win a football game. It takes more, the word starts with a G, ends with an S, and has a UT in between. It takes more of that to say no when they pass the bottle around than it does to win the decathlon in a track meet. It takes more intestinal fortitude and strength. Listen, I have seen men who had strength enough to lift 300 pounds or press 300 pounds of weight. I have seen men that could win boxing matches and wrestling matches and were behemoth men. I've seen giants of men who didn't have enough strength to say no to a little bottle about that tall. And so what he's saying here, what she's saying here is, son, give not thy strength unto women. What she's saying is be strong enough to say no unto women. Wonder why this mother starts talking about women right off the bat. Huh? Well, she knows women. She knows how she got his old man. You see? And she knows women. Now, I know men. Now, I have looked the world over, and I have been in most of the country, most of the states of the Union, and many, many foreign countries, and I say this objectively. I have yet to see a man I think is worthy of one of my daughters. Would you say the same thing? Listen, I have never yet married a boy whose mother thought he was getting a good deal. Now, I say never yet. I'm only stretching it a bit. But here's the usual case. Now if he is mine, that I know, well, grace, that's it's coming. If he, I say this, if he is mine, and I don't say this to be bragging, and then you brag for a half hour, he's a good boy. Now, Brother Howells, I don't mind him getting married. Now, you're a liar, and you know it. I don't mind him getting married. But, Brother Howells, I just don't think this is the one for him. And I think that's the way it ought to be. Well, you know why? Because you know women. And that's one reason why a man says, I don't mind my daughter getting married, but that guy, what does she see in him? Well, same thing your wife saw in you, not much. And but anyway, that guy, now what I'm saying is this. This lady starts off talking about the watching women. And that's the first thing. A young man is naturally tempted to fall for an evil woman more than a young woman is tempted to fall for an evil man. Now, listen carefully. A young man has a different reason to go into adultery or into physical sin or immorality than a young woman does. A young woman does it 99 times out of 100 for social acceptance or fear of not getting a date or of being afraid not to be in the crowd or afraid she won't be able to be one of the gang. She does it for fear she'll be an old maid. She does it not for passionate reasons usually, but a young man goes into adultery for a different reason. Normally, and I'm talking very frankly to you, normally the touch of the hand clasp does more to lead the young man into sin than the young woman. And that's why a young man has to be very, very careful. You young ladies, for example, you don't know what you're doing sometimes when you allow a young man to have liberties with you. You think he feels the same way you do. He doesn't. Now, mothers and daddies, I hope you don't think I'm too frank, but you don't tell them. Somebody's going to have to. And it's not the same. You feel there's a touch of the hand. For a young lady, it may be a comradeship. It's not true for a young man. That's one reason why that I do not think it's a good idea for anybody that's not married to kiss. Now, you call me an old folk if you want to. I still agree with that. Well, I think it'll be okay. When you get married at the altar, it's okay if you don't kiss too long. What, God's going together, don't put us under, and then, you know, like that. But after you're married 6 months, it's okay to go right ahead and really kiss. But I think it's not a good idea. Now, you say, Brother Howells, I don't agree with you. Okay, you may not. But I'll say this. You do it my way, and you'll come near being clean. You'll be clean. You do it your way, you're taking a chance. You do it my way, you're not taking a chance. You see what I mean? That's one reason why I don't think it's a good idea for young men. Now, you say what you want to say. But young men, to take a young lady, for example, and a lot of married men do this to ladies, and maybe to touch her arm like this, or to walk up. I've seen preachers do it. Walk up and say hello. They say, you don't watch me do that. Thank you. You don't watch. Now, sometimes at the altar, in dealing with people, there must be an intimacy. But I'm talking about in regular activity. You don't see me doing things like that. I'm not touching anybody's wife's elbow or anybody else's elbow. I got, there's only two elbows in this world I touch, and they both belong to the girl sitting on the third row back down, right down there. Her elbow's the only ones I touch. My secretaries have said to you that yesterday, I came back to the church after making a visit, and Meredith Popper was coming back in after going out for a while, and she and I got to the door at the same time. And so I opened the door for her, and I felt so guilty. We both came in together. And first thing I said and walked in, the staff looked out and I said, hold it, we just happened to get here at the same time. We come in together, we didn't go out together. And then, please, get this straight now. And of course they started kidding me, they're not feeling about it. But listen, you cannot be too careful in your handling the opposite sex. Young ladies, I say it again, you don't realize it. You don't realize it. That's one reason why I went to university 100% in not allowing the young people to hold hands on the campus. Holding it, you young ladies will say, well, I don't see anything wrong with it. Yeah, but you young men won't. You young men won't. You know what's wrong with it. You see? That's one reason why you're not going to sit in my church and hug and neck and sit. I don't care if you're in the balcony. One time over in the building, we had some kids doing that, and we turned the lights on during baptism, and it surprised a few people. We're not going to do it. I'm simply saying, now you say, okay, but, all right, look, let me see the ones you turn out, and I'll show you the ones I turn out. Let's just look at the final product. Some of you folks are hard-headed. You'd go to Ford Motor Company and tell them how to build Fords. Well, I just don't believe in that riveting. You never have built a Ford. And some of you young people think you're so hot and mighty and think you know so much and think you know what Brother Hiles does. Let me see how many young folks you've ever turned out. Let me see your preacher boys. Let me see your college students. Let me see your happy homes. Let me see your Ron and Sarah Perkins. Yeah, let me see them. You think you're so hot? You think you know more than I do? You think you've got more sense than Brother Hiles? You think you've got more sense than your Sunday school teacher and Brother Hiles and Brother Terry and Brother Hand and Brother Fisk and Brother Colson, your mother and your dad? You think the sun comes up to hear you crow every morning? You think you're so hot? You're not so hot. You better listen to somebody who's got more sense than you have and forgotten more than you know. Listen, more people than you have gone down the road to shame and ruin and wreck because they didn't listen to somebody else. They thought they were smarter than anybody else. You better hear what your mother said. When your mama says, young man, don't you touch a young lady, you hear what she says. You sit up straight and listen to her, and don't you call an old fogey. If you even think about it, get on your wicked knees and ask God to forgive you. I say it again. Young ladies, you be careful. You let a fella put his arm around you. It won't do to you what it does to him, but now I'm going to say something, and this is a strong statement, I'm going to say it. Usually, the touch of a young lady, when a young man touches a young lady, the electricity goes through it. And young man, you will have, if you don't watch out, passion stirred in you that ought not to be stirred. Now you better listen to me. Like this fellow did. This fellow said to his mother, or at least his mother called him and said, give not thy strength unto women. There's nothing sweeter, and I didn't intend to say this long on this, but there's nothing sweeter than the proper relationship between the sexes. Nothing sweeter. Then the right kind of relationship between men and women. How I thank God for the women whom I know. The women in this church. And I don't know how to say this, but somebody said to me, one time they came here and said, you've got the prettiest women in this church. And they said, haven't you? I said, I don't know. That's funny. I went to the mother and daughter banquet one time. Remember that time I showed the slides? And you ladies insulted me so terribly about those slides. But anyway, I went, and you know, I sat there and I looked at you gals and I never really noticed how pretty you were before. I mean, to me, that's not the issue. To me, you're sweet Christian people, and there's a beauty about you that God's given you, and there's a labor of love we have together here, and that's the way it ought to be. And that kind of relationship, how sweet and how holy it is, and how wonderful it is to have teachers and workers and staff members and secretaries and others with whom we can have the right kind of relationship, the kind that God intended for us to have. And look, young men, you single girls and you single young men, you be sure that your relationship is always right and above board and holy. And listen to what Mother says about young women. Now, you sit with the house. I'm one of those. I can park and pet and neck in a dark alley on Lover's Lane, and I don't go into deep sin. You are a fool. Did you hear me? I said, you are an idiot. Is that strong enough? You are a moron. Is that strong enough? Are you mad yet? I'll go further. You are a lame brain. If you had heard what I heard in the last few weeks of people that sit in this church and hear me preach Sunday after Sunday, you'd wonder why I'm talking like I am right now. And you better listen to me, young people. You better hear what Brother Howes is saying. You listen. Brother Howes, I just get such a thrill. Sure you do. Just at home, I was home the other night watching a television program called The Dating Game, and young lady asked the question. She said to the fellow on the other side of the screen, you know, if you ever see that game, you know that a young lady asks questions to some men she can't see, and the one that asks the question best, they go on a weekend trip together or something real nice and Christian. And she said, how is the young man supposed to feel when he kisses the young lady? I wanted to get up and shout, convicted! He gave some kind of a sexy answer, and I said to my daughter, I said, Corgan won't watch in this den anymore. That won't be on this television anymore. Not anymore at all. Never! You sit and watch these programs and read in these magazines how to kiss and five ways to make love, and you'll end up just as sorry as the devil! Now, you young men, listen to me tonight. You decide you're going to be clean and walk straight and be above board and be decent. And let young ladies walk down the street past you without feeling like you're looking at them like you look at a bunch of pigs and say prayers. Be holier than that. Be cleaner than that. Have the right kind of a mind that young lady will know that she can trust you and your mind and your thoughts. And so, the mother said, give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth the kings. Brother, listen. I don't know if this is about Solomon or not, but if anybody ever learned that women destroys a king, name me some kings that women destroy. Name me a king or two. Who? David. Woman destroyed David. Name another king. Solomon. Name me another. Name me a strong man in the Bible that women destroyed. Samson. Who else? I can't think of any more yet. Now look, if a man is strong enough where God chooses him to be king of his chosen race and lets him be reared in the home of David, a man after God's own heart, then you better watch it. That little boy leaving back there, you know who he is? Check him, fellas. Don't let him go out by himself in the cold. I don't know who he belongs to. Maybe it's okay. Maybe some parent knows about it, but... Is it your boy? Okay, it's a father boy. Let him go. I believe I'd go with him, though. I believe I'd watch it. I'm a little cold out there, and knowing him like I do, send three fellas with him. That scared me. I saw the boy walking over here and back out the door. And all right. If it happened to Solomon, it happened to you. You better watch it. All right? Now to verse 4, please. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. Give strong drink to him that is ready to perish. What it means is give strong drink to him that's fool enough to kill himself. That's what it means. Stupid idiot, hasn't got enough sense. If he wants to kill himself, let him do it this way. It'll be about as quick as any other way, suicide. And goes on to say, and wine to those that be of heavy heart. And if you'll check your scope of Bible, it means bitter of soul. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. Open thy mouth to the dumb and the... Well, let's stop right there. First through verse 7, the mother said, son, don't you touch strong drink. And every mother ought to teach her son not to touch strong drink. Now listen, young people, I want you to hear me for a minute. I want every young person to stand up. I want to be sure you hear me. Every teenager to stand up. I want you to listen to me right now. You know, it seems about the time I get through with the course. Listen, on everyone, if you put your eyes on me right now, it seems like about every time I get through with the course on something like this, and I think I've got you about straightened up here, somebody that's gone off the deep end. And it almost seems, I told the wife, it seems, let's look at me. It almost seems that I ought to do this three times a week and more than three times a week to keep everybody straight. Now, you hear me right now. I've been preaching 10 years. You are a fool if you even touch alcoholic beverages. You are a fool. Listen, it is the granddaddy of 10,000 other sins. You say, well, I'm going to go to the altar clean. If you drink liquor, you will not go to the altar clean. You have 9 chances to 1 under the influence of liquor. But you say, I don't tend to get drunk. Neither did any alcoholic that stumbles in that rescue mission. You make up your mind right now, you're not going to hang. Listen to me, look at me. You're not going to hang around people that drink. You're not going to run with a drinking crowd. And you are a fool if you think you can get by with it. Who made you so hot and mighty? Who made you so resistible to temptation? Who made you the only person in the world that, listen, you will end up in the gutter. You will end up with a broken home. You will end up with some venereal disease. You will end up with your life wrecked and ruined. You will end up outside the will of God. In God's name, don't you touch it. And don't you hang around the crowd that does. Now be seated. That's the second thing she said. And you better hear me. Oh, that's the third thing this gal told her son. This mother told her son. It's in verse 8. Open thy mouth for the dumb. And this is not the dumb like I'm dumb. This is the dumb like the folks back here are dumb. Clark is dumb both ways. We'll see when it soaks in. All right, fine, okay. Open thy mouth for the dumb in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. Open thy mouth to judge righteously and plead the cause of the poor and needy. The third thing she said is, son, you're going to be a king now. She said, son, stay with the common fellow. Stay with the poor and the common fellow. Plead the cause of the oppressed. Open thy mouth to the needy. Judge righteously. What's she saying? She thinks, son, you're going to be the king. And you're going to have a lot of folks to reign over. Now she said, son, I want you never to forget. Plead the cause of the poor. Plead the cause of the poor. That's the third thing. Always, listen, always understand people's conditions. You know, they come to me. I have no rest. I don't have a night at home. I spend a night at home with my family, and I'll answer the phone sometimes 15 times. And sometimes we'll look forward to a night at home, and we'll sit down as a family around a circle. And sometimes I never get in the same room. I'm on the phone. It just rings. And most of the calls, 75% of them, are home problems. 75% of them, home problems. Now look, one thing that I ask God to help me do is never personally, when a person has stumbled into sin or when a person's in trouble, let me condemn him because he's in trouble. I do all my mean preaching to those before they get in trouble. I won't call you a moron when you come to me in trouble. I'll help you. I'll think I told you you're an idiot and you were and a moron. But I won't tell you. When you come, listen, you young people, go ahead, drink that rotten, filthy stuff, be a fool, pour it down your belly and run with a crowd that's not decent to run with and turn your back on God's people and God's crowd. Go ahead and do it. And then when you get in trouble, and you married some girl that's not decent to marry, and you're in trouble, and you're about to get a divorce, and she won't go to church with you, and your parents are ashamed of her, and then you're having trouble in your home, and then pretty soon she starts trifling on you, and the home is broken up. Come on back to my office. I'll be there, and I'm not going to tell you I told you so. I'm not going to tell you that. And I'm not going to scold you. I'm not going to call you an idiot. I'm going to try to help you. So here's what the lady was saying. She said, now, son, you keep clean. But she said, always, always be willing to help those that are not. You rise high as you can, but always plead the cause of the poor and the needy and the sinner and try to help people. And always understand that people get in trouble. I mentioned last Sunday night an awful case about a little lady expecting a baby. And I told you about what kind of a baby and how awful it was. And I could hardly sit in my chair at my desk and believe what I heard with my ears. Well, I told you Sunday night about it. And yet, we talked kindly to her and tried to help her and tried to advise her and tried to counsel with her. So the mother said, son, first thing I want you to do is don't mess around with bad women. Number two, let me stop. You say, preacher, how do I know a bad woman? Well, that's a pretty tough question. I'll say this. If she don't go to church, she's bad enough. If she doesn't go to church, the chances are pretty good. And I'll go a step further than that. If she doesn't go to some good red hot church, look, I put my head off. I holler and scream and bellow and kick and call you idiots and everything else. And still, we have folks get in trouble every week.
Think how mean these folks must be that go to these churches where the preacher doesn't ever say anything about sin.
I mean, I scold and I scold and I warn and I wave the flag and I beg and I cry and I plead. And yet almost every week somebody that sits and hears me plead scolds me in public. Almost every week. Now, if that be the case, I wonder what chances you've got to go to some church where the preacher don't even have Sunday night services and the preacher preaches about 20 minutes on Sunday morning. I wonder what chance you've got to find a good girl there. Huh? I wonder what chance you got to find a good boy there. I said to my daughter this afternoon, I said, Becky, be careful about extracurricular activities at school. Be careful about it. School gets enough of your life already. I said, give the church and your home the rest of it. Don't do too many extra things at school. Now, I'm going to go a step further. I'm not against football. I like football. I went out the other day, first time in 4 years, and saw a football game. Saw Munster play Park Forest or something. And I cheered, and David and I got on the sidelines, and every time the ball had advanced, we'd run down there. We stayed on the field, right beside them all the time. And I like football, but I thank God. Now, I'm not against you playing football. In fact, I'm for you. I'm going to come see some of your games as you play. I'm going to cheer for you. Mike Green, mentioned him, I'm going to ordain tomorrow night. I mentioned him a while ago. Mike was a great football player. I have some personal friends that are wonderful football players. Bill Glass plays defensive end, Cleveland Brown. He's a personal friend of mine. Know him well. He's a great Christian. I think he shouldn't play ball on Sunday, but he's a great Christian. And I love him. But I, for my personal desires, I thank God that when I slid into third base, the first day I went out for baseball, and could I say this humbly without bragging, I was really a good baseball player. How do you look? A cock-eyed looking good. I can't do it. But they begged me to come out for baseball. We have 2,000 students in our high school. The coach begged me to come out for baseball. And the first day I slid into third base, and this knee right here, still got a knot on it, this knee right here turned or something, and I couldn't play any more athletics. When I was in junior high school, I made the basketball team and was the pitcher on the softball team. When I went to high school, the coach told me, said, we want you to basketball in high school, and my knee kept me from playing. And I never could play any sport in high school. Now, I'm not against sports in high school, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm just glad that I didn't have... I'm glad when I got out of school, I went home. Now, I'm just saying, be careful about too many extracurricular activities at school. You say, preacher, you're trying to make us not have any fun. I'm trying to make you have fun 10 years from now. I'm trying to make you have fun that won't end up not being fun. I'm trying to make you have fun that'll make you have a happy home and that you have fun and rear some decent children and go to church and have a respectable family and a respectable home. And I'm simply saying, be careful about too much extracurricular activity. Be sure you come to all the youth activities here. And let me stop and just say a word about this too, Buster. You're not so high and mighty that you're too good to come to youth activities either. Let me just say that to you, you big boys. You're not so big. You girls, you're not so fluffy. Spelled F-L-U-E-E-E-C-I-E. You're not so fluffy. You're not too good. Well, you say it's just about little old kids. Okay, then if you'd come, be some big idiots there too. You're not too good to come. You get the place, you think you got to hang around a hot rod gang and hang around down at the corner drugstore and say, well, what kind of work can we do for a blast tonight? I don't know what you can do. You go home, go to bed. You're not too good to come. If you're a sober tourist, be a chaperone. Come chaperone these poor little kids that are 6 months younger than you. You don't like what I'm saying tonight, you'll like it someday, and someday if you don't like it, you'll wish you had liked it. You're not listening to the fellow that just started preaching yesterday, or a fellow that's just trying to get you to subscribe to some rules that he's made up because he likes the rules. You're listening to a fellow who knows something about what it takes to make a happy, decent Christian life. I've seen enough of them come through now to know I've seen the tears of those that sat and sulked in church while the preacher told them. I've seen their tears of repentance and sorrow when it was too late to make something out of their life. Listen, they're young people. Like I said before, many times, when I say I pronounce you husband and wife, I want to say, I want to just go out and paint the town red, just rejoicing. I mean, some of you, some of you folks married right now, sitting right here in this room. Remember how I used to do? I'd sit in the office and say, look, no, that's not the kind of fellow you ought to go with. I know, but I love him. Okay, Mary. Oh, but I just can't live without him and die with him. And mothers and daddies have cried, and I have cried, and we've pleaded with you and begged you and tried to be some sense in your head. And a lot of you have come to me since then. You're here tonight. You've come and reached out and said, Brother Hiles, I want to thank you. You stayed with me. Now, I'm not mad at you. I want to help you. And if you'll listen to me, I can. And so, be careful about women, about liquor. And then associate yourself always with the common man. Never be too good for anybody. Then the fourth thing that she taught him, and this is a big thing about the chapter, start with verse 10. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart, just to read this, is to read one of the great pieces of literature ever written. Shakespeare would blush as he compares his to this. The heart of her husband does faith to trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hand. And he goes down to talk about, and look, can't you picture this mother talking to her boy? Huh? Can't you picture her looking at this son and saying, son, I won't tell you what a virtuous woman is. And she goes on to tell him what kind of a woman he ought to marry. I said to my sister one time, I said, you know, mother thinks there's not a good woman in the world. I said, all my childhood, she told me how wicked women were. And my sister started laughing, and she said, well, you know, she always told me how wicked men were. How she warned us. I want you to know, if my mother, when I was a kid, you teenagers, when I was in junior high school, I was president of the senior class, and I've told you kids this, and I had a date. And the fellow in the back seat started holding the hand. He held the hand of the girl. And I stopped the car and got out of the car and told him to get out. And I grabbed him to the nape of the neck. And I said, we'll not have any of that in my car. Holding hands. I mean, really, that's something? Well, I did what now? I just figured he was almost in adultery. That's how awful that mother made it sound to me. But can't you feature this mother here? She said, now, son, let me tell you what a good woman is. I want you to notice how she ended it, and then we're going to take the end and then go back to the first. Look at verse 30. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain. Now, this is the thing I want to say to you first about looking for a wife. Favor is deceitful. Circle the word favor and write charm. Charm. Funny thing about this word, it means the kind of charm you'd get at what they used to call a finishing school. They still have finishing schools. When I was a kid, they used to have finishing schools where girls could go and get finished, you know. And they go and learn how to walk, you know, gracefully, and how to balance a teacup on their knee, and how to shake hands, and all that. I think all that's good. But it's what it says here, favor is deceitful. And this word deceitful here is an interesting word. It means outward varnish. Outward varnish. The favor is just outward varnish. What she should have said here, son, you can't tell what's inside the house by looking at the varnish on the outside. And what he's saying, is anything wrong with painting a house? No. Anything wrong, this is varnish. Anything wrong with varnishing the carpet? No, sir. But what she's saying is, the big thing is not the varnish. Big thing, what's it made of? And she's saying, now, son, listen, grace and charm, all that's important, son, but don't be fooled by that. You can learn that just like you can varnish a piece of balsam wood. You you can make it look good on the outside. But she said, son, favor is outward varnish. And then she goes on to say, beauty is vain. And the word beauty here is an interesting word. Now, is this what it means? I'll have to teach it. It comes from the word symmetry, or the word shape. That's what it comes from. It comes from the silhouette. And what he's saying is this. She's saying, son, the outward varnish and the beauty of a young lady's body, those things are vain. They'll pass away.
Whenever those shoulders begin to stoop, and they will, whenever that beautiful complexion begins to wad up, and you look in the mirror and you see some, and here's where it starts, brother, some little crow's feet right here. And I've been watching them develop for years. It starts right there. First place, huh? You ladies got, listen, a lot of you ladies got half your makeup right there. And the old gray mare ain't what she used to be. You're going to wish you hadn't married that dime store, vanity bench gal. You're going to wish you'd have married somebody that had some beauty that'll last and show through, that kind of stuff. This stuff wears out. Beauty of soul never wears out. Never. Some ladies in this church right now whose beauty far exceeds some of you little gals that traded your own eyelashes for the dime store. And I never saw a pair of dime store ones that look as good as your own. But a lot of you fellas, you're not marrying a woman. You marrying Avon. With all due respect to Mrs. Canavan. Not marrying. Listen, you don't know what she looks like. You'd be surprised. When you walk in the kitchen the first morning, you're going to say, oh, pardon me, man. You like the fellow that got married and his wife went home and unscrewed her wooden leg and put it in the drawer and took her false teeth out and put it in the drawer, took her glass eyeball out and put it in the drawer, took her hearing aid off and put it in the drawer. He said, and took her the false eyelashes off and put them in the drawer, and then wiped her face off and put the makeup in the drawer. And he said, what I want to know is to sleep with you or in the drawer. I don't know where more of you is. That'll all pass away. She says, son, be careful of that. Don't be deceived by beauty. Don't be deceived by beauty. Now, I think a young lady ought to be pretty. But a young man's crazy if he chooses a lady just because she's pretty. Let's see a few of the things right quickly. We'll just have a few minutes, and we'll just get started on a few of the things that a young man ought to find in a girl. And young men, if you'll get this, you'll be here next Wednesday night and listen tonight and listen for the next Tuesday week. You'll get some things that'll help you the rest of your life. Same thing about this. Look, if you ran a dime store and you're going to hire a clerk, let me have a teenager. Let's see. Dick, if you were the manager of a dime store and you were going to hire a clerk to sell birthday party favors and use the cash register, wouldn't you want some references about her? Wouldn't you want to find out folks that have known her before? And wouldn't you want to check and be sure that she was trustworthy? You know, the average boy doesn't spend as much time checking on a wife that's going to be the mother of his children and live with him 50 years as he would if he's manager of a dime store. Hiring a gal to sell candles or hosiery. Isn't that funny? Funny enough, it's sad. Look! Know the girl you're marrying! Most important decision. Listen, after you get saved, you will not make a decision as important as this. You say, well, how? What if a God calls me to pray? You won't be preaching if you don't get a good wife to go with you. She'll wreck your ministry. She'll do it. Now, I'm not talking about a wife that's nagging. I'm talking about, listen, I know some wonderful ladies that have ruined a man's ministry because they just didn't have the grace and poise and didn't know how to act in front of people. I mean, good ladies. Used bad English and had southern drawls and so forth. Let's see what I said. Who can find a virtuous woman? That's the first thing that you ought to have as you look for a wife. Shall be virtuous. That's the first thing, virtuous.
I'm going to say what about the word virtuous next week, but let me say this, young man. You marry a woman, a girl that's clean. Clean. Now, most of you young men will say, well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to marry a fellow that's clean. Okay? Listen, if you've got a right to run around before you get married, she's got a right to. Anything in the world that nauseates me is for some fellow to say to me, I didn't marry her, I found out she wasn't pure. And I said, well, how about you? Well, I'm not pure either, but I want a pure woman. You're a crook. You be clean, you marry a girl that's clean. And young ladies, you see too, if they got a lot of clean gals to choose from and they want to get married. Stay clean. I wish you could hear what teenagers ask me. I'm going to tell you what. My office! Now, this is a little frank, but I'm going to say it. She said, my boyfriend has disrobed in front of me. What I want to ask you is, you think it's wrong to disrobe in front of him? That girl's heard me preach a lot of times. A lot of times. I wanted to get up and scream, get out! But God gave me enough wisdom to talk kindly, but I said to her, the thing you've just done, asked me is one of the most vulgar, filthy, vile, obscene, suggestive things I've heard of in my life. Some of you folks think I just get all the mean things I can think of and preach against them, so I have to have a sermon. I'm talking from week by week and day by day experience. I know what's going on in this area. People stacked on top of each other by the thousands. Not like it was out in the country when you didn't see a girl, but every Saturday when you went downtown. When you was 14, you saw somebody in town. Mom, what's that? Mom said, that's a girl. Sure is pretty. Came home and said, Pop, I just discovered that there's a girl. Not like that anymore. I'd like it anymore, but the time they're 5 or 6 years old, they know more things than you and I knew we got married. This area stacks on top of each other. It's going to take a lot of butting their heads against a wall and a lot of preaching. That's one reason why I don't care. Listen, I mean this. I don't care if you had to ski to church tonight. I think you ought to have gotten your kids here. You had to ice skate or crawl on the ice. We can't get too much preaching down this rope. Choose somebody that's virtuous and clean. Verse 11. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. Fellows, marry someone you can trust. Marry someone you can trust. Fellow said to me less than a month ago, he said, I'm going to marry so-and-so because I'm afraid if I don't, somebody else will get her. I said, you're crazy. He said, I can't trust her. As my girlfriend, I've got to marry her. I know she'll be faithful. A little piece of paper that size signed by the preacher in the county courthouse not going to make a good woman out of a wicked woman. Listen, you marry somebody, young man, that you can trust. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her. Oh, that's good, isn't it? Marry someone whom you can trust. Someone you know that's yours and that you're the one. She's the one for you. And someone you can trust. Then it says, so that he shall have no need to spoil. I'm going to come back to that, but verse 12, I want to say, she will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. Choose someone that will live for you. Someone that will live for you. I told you several chapters back what the word virtue means in the Bible. It means the man. The word vir comes from a word that means man. And virtuous woman is a man woman. What does it mean? A woman who gets her man and invests her life in him. Do you know that when the First Baptist Church grows and whatever contribution I make, do you know the only chance my wife has got really to contribute to the kingdom is boost me? You'll be surprised how many wives, young man, you'll be surprised how many wives are jealous of their husbands. I don't mean jealous somebody else going to get in. I mean jealous because he has a better time than she has, she thinks, and she don't like it because he might have some fun and she doesn't. Men come to me with a drove, and my wife said to me, said, well, you get out and have your fun, and I'll never get outside this house. Isn't that a wonderful, great heart? So that just gets it right here.
Isn't that tremendous?
I mean, that's what the Lord meant when he said, she will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. The heart of her husband does safe to trust in her. That's what it meant. It meant that you ought to just get on him if he gets more fun than you do.
Well, I just stay here with these kids from morning till night.
Well, now, I think that he ought to see to it that you ought to get out a little bit and have a little fun. But I still think that that's not exactly...
He comes home from work, and there you are, your hair's all rolled up, you got grease on your face, and your old greasy house coat on, and you look up at him and say, you've probably been out with somebody else. He says, no, but I wish I had.
I'm simply saying that the kind of woman that you want to marry, fellas, and the kind of woman you want to be, girls. You fellas better listen to me now, you're going to need this one of these days. The kind of woman you want to be. The kind of woman you ought to marry is the kind you can trust, and the kind that'll do you good. The other day, my wife's not perfect, and I'm not. I'm more imperfect than she. But the other day, oh man, I was so tired, and I hadn't had a day off in about 5 or 6 weeks. And I decided I was going to try to take part of the day off, and I play golf about 4 or 5 times a year. So I said to my wife, I think I'll just fiddle around. She said, why don't you go play golf? And I said, yeah, I think it will. Funny thing about it, I called the office and said to my secretary, I said, I think I may just take a work a little bit and play a little bit. And Sandy said, I hope you'll play more than you work today. I called with Terry and I said, well, Terry, you want to go play golf a couple hours, 9 holes of golf? And he said, no, I can't. I'm working with at home. And we got my dad and mother coming in for a visit, and I'm helping Marilyn sort of clean the house a little bit today and get everything up. He called back in a few minutes, and I get this. He said, Marilyn, said, honey, you haven't been out for a while. You've been working pretty hard. Won't you go on now? I'll take care of the house. Now, my wife has said that. And so I called, so happened the golf clubs that the folks gave me for my birthday were up here at the church. All I'd used before since my birthday. Now, it was September, now it's November. They took a picture of me over here with a golf club in my office and gave it to the deaf and the shut-ins. They gave me a couple of golf clubs and a golf bag, and it's been over in my office in the restroom ever since I got them. And so I was going to go out and play, and morning was half over, and I called the office and I said to my sister, would you mind bringing my golf clubs out here, please? But sure, you gonna play golf? Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad. And mother heard about it. Well, listen, brother, I got more fame than Johnson did going to Manila. Now you know, don't you see what I'm saying? My wife said, honey, why don't you play golf today? And my mother said, I hope you'll get some relaxation. And my secretary said, I hope you'll get some relaxation and rest. I think they all would be easy to get along with if I would. And I think, Brother Terry, I suspicion the fact that really you change your mind for one reason, because you came in one day the day and said, preacher, you better get some rest. Now, you've been working too hard. I sort of suspicion that maybe you can't play golf a little bit because you want me to get out. I think you want to get out, too, but I think you want me to get out, too. Now, don't you think that's a better way to live than getting you a placard and demonstrating for your rights? Don't you think that's the way folks ought to live? Isn't that what God intended, the kind of people intended for us to be? Fellas, this little old gal says to you, I saw you looking at that girl. You better trade her for that girl. If you can't get along with her while you've got a 32-inch stomach, she won't be much off on your side when you've got a 42-inch. When your shoulder size becomes your stomach size and your stomach size becomes your shoulder size, she won't stick with you through thick and thin. She won't do it. I hope you'll get the right kind. Our Father, help us to do right and choose right and help be right and be big people and people of generosity and unselfishness and the kind of people that'll help us help people and where people can be helped along the way and can be boosted along the trail. We're all having a tough time. Help us to be the kind that help others and thereby find the right place in life and the joy thou hast for us. In Jesus' name, amen.